Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
I have a premise for this short little podcast, and that premise is that every time we click the shutter, we have some idea of what we hope the finished image might be. Sometimes we go all the way to pre-visualization, like we did in the old days of the zone system and Ansel Adams' teaching about exposure and development. Sometimes we just see the image in our mind's eye, even fleetingly, or we preview it on our LCD screen and think, oh, well, that could be an interesting image. Even if you're just gathering assets, as I've talked about so many times before, you have some idea of what the image might look like when it's finished. But I think it actually goes a step further than that, because not only do we have an idea of what the image might look like when it's all completed, we also believe that it's going to be a winner. Why else would you click the shutter? You don't click the shutter if you think, well, that's going to be a loser, but I'll photograph it anyway. No, you click the shutter every time because you think this has got the potential to be a winner. And you may not even just think it, you may have tremendous confidence about that. But then something happens, as they say, on the way to the forum. We look at the contact sheet. We start making some prints. We've loaded up in Lightroom or Photoshop, and we start doing some processing. And the image fails to spark our enthusiasm the way we thought it might. And the more we work with the image, sometimes the more discouraged we get about what we're seeing, to the point where eventually we just give up on that image and move on. After all, there's lots and lots of other negatives or lots and lots of other digital files we could work on that probably have a better chance of being successful. But today, I want to take a closer look at this entire process. Because if 100% of the shutter clicks are motivated by the winner we see in our mind's eye, why is it that not all of your images eventually are winners? Seriously, what happens to diminish our enthusiasm for an image? I think this can be summed up in four short words. Failure to meet expectations. That image, that gorgeous, spectacular image that we had in our mind's eye, just doesn't translate to what we see as we work on the image. It fails to meet our expectations, and as a result of that, we eventually give up on it. But if we look at that process a little more deeply, the question that comes to mind is, whose expectations? On the surface, of course, it's simply your expectations of what you saw in your mind's eye when you clicked the shutter. But it's almost as if art makers, we find ourselves in a situation where we're bifurcated between what we thought consciously we were going to produce and maybe what our subconscious saw at the time of the exposure. And whose opinion do we trust? Whose opinion do we believe? Do we believe the you that clicked the shutter? But what if the image wants to be something other than what you've seen in your mind's eye? That is to say, what if the image pulls you in a direction other than the one you intended? I know, it's kind of silly to talk about these images as though they have free will and consciousness. But are we sure they don't? That is to say, not the image, but your subconscious mind. What role does it have in deciding to click the shutter, in choosing to photograph this scene as compared to all the other ones you've driven by, or as I've said before, this tree, rather than photographing all the other trees that you've rejected because they somehow didn't meet your criteria? The subconscious mind has a tremendous role in helping us choose what we want to photograph. In the first place, the subconscious mind is the repository of everything we've ever seen. So all the photographs you've looked at in books and magazines, that's there. And the aesthetics of those images are a part of what you bring to the process of being a photographer. Then there's your emotional response to the scene that also is registered in our subconscious. So maybe it's not the ones and zeros of the digital file that are making decisions and pulling you in a different direction, but maybe it's your subconscious. And what I'm suggesting here is perhaps a battle that rages between your conscious mind, what you think you want the picture to be, and your subconscious mind that sees something else in the image. For example, maybe the conscious mind wants to make a picture that is accepted, that looks like other people's pictures, that presents the subject in a comfortable and well-known aesthetic presentation. And your subconscious mind, which wants to do something a little different, something a little more subtle, something maybe uniquely yours, that's encapsulated in your response to what it is that you see. I've titled this podcast, When Images Have a Mind of Their Own, because that's the experience that I've had in processing images off and on over my entire career, but more frequently as I've gotten older and matured and have more subconscious reservoir to draw upon. So I did a little test. I decided to see what would happen if I took some images and processed them the way I thought maybe they would be processed for popularity, so that those images fit the expectations of the photographic world. And then I took those same images in a virtual copy in Lightroom and tried to process them as the image seemed to want to be processed. Now, of course, this is a bit of a semantic game because I'm doing the processing. So it's really not a tug of war between me and the image. But it might be a little bit of a tug of war between what I think the expectations of the image are and what my subconscious wants to express that maybe isn't so obvious or isn't so popular or isn't so cliche. I went through an entire folder of images that I had photographed in Custer State Park in South Dakota, and it was pretty fascinating. There were some images that were eliminated from this little experiment because there were some technical problems. Maybe I didn't get the camera focused on the right part of the scene, or there's some technical flaw like that, so I removed those. And then I was left with all the ones that just needed some processing to really make them shine. The first I processed like I thought might be most popular to the public at large. The virtual copy I then processed as I thought the image might want to be processed. Again, understanding that what that's really trying to tap into is something creative in my subconscious that maybe I'm not even aware of, but is trying to bubble up from deep within me. Sometimes those two images were pretty close to one another, with subtle variations. But over half of them, matter of fact, pretty close to three-quarters of them, there was a substantial difference between the cliché processing and what resulted when I took a little more time to explore a little more deeply what might be hidden in the image. Sometimes that was revealed with a crop. Sometimes I had to do some extensive removing of distractions and whatnot. Sometimes it was a color balance issue or a color rendition issue or a black and white conversion issue. In all of those cases, however, the important part of the experiment was I had to admit that these were not at all what I saw in my mind's eye at the time I clicked the shutter. They were examples of when images have a mind of their own. Well, or our subconscious has a mind of its own, and that's what propels us to click the shutter in the first place. I couldn't help but interpret this as a sort of pressure to conform, which might actually be a good thing. I can visualize scenarios in which that would be exactly what you want to do, perhaps best illustrated if your intentions are commercial and you're trying to create an image that you think will be purchased by people. You want to have something in that image that is of broad appeal. But that might be a completely different way of processing that image as compared to what would be a rendition that expresses your own personal creative response to the world. With this train of thought, I'm not in the least trying to pass any value judgment about which rendition of the print might be better, because in fact, I think they can both be true to your heart and soul. But that doesn't mean that the two versions of the image are identical. Another way to think about this, I guess, is processing an image for a project. I've talked before about how the images in a project, if there's 5 or 6 or 10, need to be processed with some similar aesthetic or they'll look discontinuous. They'll look like they don't belong together in a project. So some form of consistent processing helps make all of those images connect to one another as a project. But doesn't it make sense that bending the processing for an image so that it fits a project may not be the only way that an image can be rendered? Which in fact leads to my observation from a dozen or so years ago, which is it's perfectly possible in project-oriented photography to have the same image in more than one project, but look completely differently from one project to the next. The images get processed for the results, not based on anything that's inherently baked into the image at the time you click the shutter. That's the joy of processing. What I'm suggesting is that the vision you had at the time you clicked the shutter may be a perfectly wonderful rendition of that visual idea. But once you start digging into an image more deeply, you may find that that's not the only rendition of that image that can be a successful photograph, depending on the project, depending on the subconscious rendering of the scene, and which aesthetic paths you choose to follow, paths being plural, more than one. And a simplified way of thinking about that, for me, is to try to differentiate between my will imposed on an image to make the scene look like I want it to look, and its cousin, when the images have a mind of their own, and they tell me how they want to be rendered. I know, it's a bit simplistic and a little bit woo-woo, but it's a paradigm that helps me think creatively about how I'm going to process an image. And every time I cling to the idea that there is one way to process an image, I find I'm wrong. Particularly with today's incredible flexible processing in the digital workflow. There's more than one way to render an image. And that seems to be an incredibly fertile ground for exploration, particularly if we can cultivate an acceptance to the idea that images have a mind of their own and might guide us through a process of exploration, discovery, and surprise.
Copyright 2025, Lenswork Publishing.